Siren Radio.
Excellent. Eva, how was Tom Daley?
It was, he was very good, thank you. It was nice to meet a celebrity.
Yeah, so actually, in many ways, if they've managed to connect, you'll feel pretty much how Abigail LeMay feels about meeting that celebratorious, wonderful writer and screenplay artist, William Coles.
I know, even better.
William, you've got to reveal, have you managed to make contact with Abigail?
I have not only managed to make contact, we are sitting outside a pub on the Royal Mile, and yes, she's been ID'd as well.
Nice, yeah.
Nice.
Well, there we are. Yeah, these are critical. I mean, she looks so young. Who would have thought? But with hollow legs, she's Canadian. We'll have a word with Abigail in a few moments. Eloise is with us. Eloise, have you been to Edinburgh?
I haven't, and it makes me really sad.
This is one of the reasons why I was talking to William about getting a kind of spring journey to Edinburgh, and obviously now we're in summer. Because of the weather, you know, where do we go?
It's gorgeous outside, isn't it?
It is
gorgeous.
Fantastic. What's the weather like in Edinburgh? I mean, presumably, as you're sitting outside, it must be blowing a gale, I would have thought, at least.
It's scorching. It must be the hottest February day on record, I think.
You see, that's what happens when you get a Canadian to actually travel through the country. Impacts global warming.
Do you think
warming.
It's down to Abigail coming up here? Well, possibly.
I think that's... I mean, Bethany, what do you think?
Definitely her fault.
Have you ever met Tom Daley, by the way, William? I mean, this is the diver, the person who sort of dives Olympically and sort of takes off virtually every stitch of his clothing just to dive in, really. Otherwise, he'd be like an Olympian.
I've never had the pleasure of meeting him. He does a good dive. Yeah, you're right.
So, did he dive for you, Eva?
He did. I do have some videos.
He actually dived. He said, Eva, this one's for you. Splash. Fantastic. Just goes to show you, see, he's one of the Olympic athletes from that point of view. William, a couple of questions. Was Abigail what you were expecting? That's not a trick question, but I mean, you know, how is that? Because sometimes you think, well, I might have seen a photograph on Facebook, might have spoken to her on a day-by-day basis, etc., or week-by-week basis. What was your first impression? Talk us through how you actually met up with Miss LeMay.
Well, I'd already told her exactly where I was sitting and precisely what I was wearing. Mm-hmm. And then she came up with this sort of lazy Canadian drawl, and I presumed that this was her. Wow. And she looked about young enough to be one of your groupies. So I thought, yes,
groupies, I like that.
William, please, you know, our lawyers are listening, etc. And that's the reason. I mean, it was suggested a few years ago by Jody, I believe, that we should actually change the name to Midrick Drive Babes. I said, no, it's too sexist. We're Midrick Driveettes. Let's go on that sort of basis. Equality,
right,
that's the important thing.
Fine.
I just had a women in sports scenario, so that's important for that.
Yeah, so the only guys who are allowed on is Ben, isn't that right?
He's not here today.
Because he's outside drinking.
Thank you, Eva.
You're
He was. It's driven him to drink, the fact that Abigail has made it to Edinburgh ahead of him from that point of view. So, Bethany, when was the last time you were in the capital of Scotland?
I've never been. I've never been to anywhere in Scotland. I can't believe it. I'm
clearly,
missing
you've
out.
Got to put that right. You've been to Cardiff, but not to Edinburgh.
Yeah, lots of places in Wales.
And Eva?
Do you know what? I'm the other way around. I've never been to Cardiff. No. I've been to Edinburgh ages ago, though.
Mm. Well, I think probably it's time we actually had a word with Abigail. I mean, obviously, William, we'll come back to you. We've got lots of time to actually work through that.
I will put her right on.
Is that okay?
She will give her a glowing review of this place.
Well, very critical. I mean, put the same question to her, obviously, that we've just put to William. Abigail, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good. Now, your key question, and apart from the fact that clearly you're far too young to be allowed to have alcohol in Edinburgh, and, you know, it's understandable, what is your first impressions of William Coles when you actually identified him in that particular part? Because sometimes, you know, the delicacy, it's a bit like Putin getting together with Trump. You don't know whether it's going to work, you know.
No. Not at all. I think he's lovely, but I must say, upon our first meeting, he did come off a bit clumsy.
A bit clumsy? A bit clumsy.
So, coming from Abigail.
Thank you. But surely she's gone through that experience. So, I mean, Abigail, you know, can you give us some more flesh on the bones of that particular thing?
So, of course, we met and he picked a bit of a wobbly table, and unfortunately, there was some beer spilt.
Beer has been spilt.
Glasses smashed.
It was very unfortunate. I did feel really bad.
Now, where was the beer actually spilt? Was it over the table? Was it a different line of things?
It was on the table, then off the table, then down the hill.
Well, that is some journey. Wow.
Is that descriptive? Enough?
Yeah. Yes. I mean, Bethany, I know you're very excited to speak to Abigail.
Yeah, we miss you,
Abigail. The phone system. So,
hi.
And in fact, we weren't expecting to see Bethany this week because,
no,
you know, clearly
surprise.
Being a third-year English student, we figured you'd be off reading somewhere.
Well, I'm supposed to be reading. Mm. That is true. It's my reading week, but here I am.
Oh, well.
You got confused. You thought, oh, it's reading week. I'll just go down there. Yeah. Nobody actually knew what was happening. Strange. Strange indeed. So, Abigail, your thoughts on Edinburgh? It's your first time that you've actually been up there. What kind of things have you sort of done so far in this grand experience on the Royal Mile and more?
Well, my first thought, I mean, I think it's lovely, but like I told William, I was surprised because it's much hillier than I had expected.
Mm-hmm.
But so far I've done Holyrood Palace, Arthur's Seat, Edinburgh Castle, and Mary King's Close. So it's all been lovely, very historical.
And has that whole been in the one day, in the last 12 hours or so?
No, no, actually. So I've been here the past, well, I guess now 2 days. So I got here yesterday morning early. So this has been in the span of 2 days, all of this stuff that I've done.
Oh, that's not bad. That's not bad, actually. And as you said, uphill, I mean, clearly the castle is on the top of the hill because of defensive purposes to actually keep out the Canadians. That's the reason it actually built all those years ago.
Yeah, well, that didn't work so well, done, did it?
Who knows what could happen for that, by the way. Eva, questions for Abigail.
Oh, Abigail, so when did you go to Scotland? Because I don't actually know. How long have you been there? Was it just yesterday? How long are you there for?
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I did come in yesterday. I made it here at noonish.
Okay.
And then I will be here until the end of Sunday, but not in Edinburgh. So tomorrow we're doing Stirling Castle, and then on Friday we leave for Glasgow.
This is probably a clumsy question, but what have you actually gone for?
Oh, I've done, here's the list, ready? I've done Holyrood Palace, Arthur's Seat, Edinburgh Castle, and Mary King's Close.
Ah, so you're just sort of sightseeing then?
Yes.
Ah, I guess.
Just doing all the touristy things.
Or ticking them off the bucket list. Now, we did set you a little task, Abigail, last week, if you recall, about the Tam O'Shanter. Has William been of any help with respect to getting you a Tam O'Shanter or some kind of strange, crazy, tartan-esque stuff?
I can't say yes. I haven't done anything along those lines.
No. Okay.
No. It's rather tame.
We'll come back to you, Abigail, because we're kind of expanding this version, because Anna Lewis has gone back to Jersey. Who'd have thought it? Hey, she'll be back in London next week, so it's all right. So we had a little bit of expansion for yourself and William. But I figure, actually, what you need to actually help you through this experience of Scotland, see the way I kind of said Scotland, is a little touch of the Band of the Black Watch, who actually had a major hit with this back in the day, 1970s, actually. It's called Scotch on the Rocks. Okay, so in fact, Abigail, would you like to introduce formally for William's benefit the Band of the Black Watch with Scotch on the Rocks? Over to you, Abigail.
Oh, okay. Do you want me to just repeat it?
I think so. People have short-term memories these days. They've already forgotten where we are.
I'm so sorry. Can you please repeat the name?
Yeah, you see, there we are. Case in point. You know, this is the classic thing. It's the Band of the Black Watch with Scotch on the Rocks.
The Band of the Black Watch
yes.
with Scotch on the Rocks. That's the song that's coming up.
Yeah. Up next, more William Coles, more Abigail. And I'd like to see you march to this. If you want to put it on speakerphone, I'd like to see the entire part of that Edinburgh just getting down to this.
Okay.
see, this is what's going to help the joyous country of Scotland actually develop all sorts of things there. William, I mean, the band of the Black Watch and Scotch on the Rocks must be in your next movie, surely.
Absolutely. Don't you think, though, these tunes are all a bit samey?
Sorry. These tunes are all a bit samey. Are we talking about sort of mentholated sweets there? Are you talking about the bagpipes or the haggis?
Yes, the bagpipes, exactly. It doesn't have any sharps or flats on it, so the number of tunes you get out of a set of bagpipes is limited.
Well, that's because, William, as I'm sure you're aware, the reason bagpipes were invented were to terrify the enemy, because they sounded so horrendous on a battlefield that people say, run away, run away, we can't cope with these Scots Celt warriors, run away.
Obviously, I'm sure it worked very well.
We've had a number of sort of key things from that perspective in terms of marching through the process. What did you think of the Academy Awards, William? Did you catch any of it? Did you sort of think, darn it, once again I wasn't nominated for my screenplay, maybe next year?
I saw the highlights. Olivia Colman, we love her. Mm-hmm.
Was it hilarious, though? She said it was hilarious. Did we think it was hilarious?
No, it wasn't hilarious. It might have been hilarious for her, but no, it wasn't hilarious for me. No,
wasn't hilarious for Glenn Close. she put on a very brave smile.
You might like to know that we are sitting outside Deacon Brodie's, and Deacon Brodie is famous because he was the basis for Jekyll and Hyde.
Mm.
It's his pub. He was a publican, and he in the daytime he was being glad-handing all the punters who were coming into his pub, and at night he went out robbing people.
As you do, if your name's Deacon Brodie. Not to be confused with Deacon Blue, of course, who are a well-known Glasgow band.
That's true.
Yeah, it's easily done. Okay, let's open it up. Bethany, any quick questions you want to put to...
Well, what's worth seeing in Edinburgh, do you reckon? Because if I haven't been before, I need to go and see the highlights, obviously.
Clearly the part of the pub in the Royal Mail that has now been occupied by Abigail and William in a kind of summit meeting of minds.
You need to go to the castle and then you need to get yourself on a pub tour. I mean, definitely.
That's what I was going to do.
I'll give you the top 20 pubs to go to.
Very studenty.
Do you know, I haven't checked whether there have been social media updates as yet on this. I mean, I realise I've been most remiss in that, but whether it's your Instagrams, whether it's your Facebook, etc. Do you intend to have a Facebook update about this, William? Because I know sometimes you can be a little bit choosy about who you actually sort of, you know, decides to tag into these kind of things.
Yes, all right. We will have a Facebook update. You're going to have put Abigail on. She can tell you whether she's going to have a Facebook update too. Hang on.
Marvellous. I mean, obviously, there are other social networking sites available. Many people would say Facebook is just so last century. Well, actually, so last early decade of this century. We wouldn't know where we're going. But Abigail, have you been using the social media as a case of, no, I've been too busy actually getting up to the castle and back down again?
No, I have been using social media. Of course I have. But not Facebook. It's been Instagram. I'm sorry.
She's definitely Instagram. She may tell us what her Instagram handle is. She may not. I mean, she hasn't even sort of said anything at that point. I've been tagging Abigail. I don't think it's the right Abigail I've been tagging in over these last few weeks, etc. But, you know, is there a way in which people can follow you on Instagram, if they so choose?
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so my Instagram is Abby LeMay, ABBIELEMAY.
Exactly. Or indeed,
is that clear?
Not to be confused with Abigail LeMay Not. Okay, so it's Abigail LeMay, Abigail LeMay Not. Have we managed to access that then, Bethany? Have we done that?
She has a great Instagram.
She's got a great Instagram. You see, there we are.
Thank you.
It's been officially sorted out.
There's one from when she climbed Arthur's seat.
Wow.
Very
yes. Did Arthur complain? I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. Never mind. It just chose the whole thing. So how does it compare with Norway, Abigail?
Sorry?
How does it compare with Norway?
Oh, well, I mean, it's very different, considering there is no snow and it's not freezing cold.
Mm-hmm.
But it is lovely. It is hilly, just in different ways, different magnitudes.
Well, that's all we look for. And what's been the number one experience that you think, that's going to be something I will tell my great-great-grandchildren that I once actually did in Edinburgh? Was it a case of watching a screenwriter actually spill beer over various... I mean, I'm saying beer. It may not be beer. I mean, maybe sort of diet, maybe non-alcoholic lines from that point of view. Any particular thoughts?
Well, for me, I would have to say it's definitely Arthur's seat, just making it up to the top, because it was such a hefty climb to get up there.
And what did you make of Waverley Street Station?
It was terrifying. Very busy, lots of stairs. I don't really know how to describe it. I was trying to get out.
Yeah, well, and full of Scottish people. That's a holiday. Now, have you availed yourself of any food delicacies whilst you've been up there?
Absolutely not. Well, actually, you know what? You would be pleased to know I did have a Yorkshire pudding, finally, in Scotland.
Oh.
Yes.
But nothing particularly Scottish.
No, I mean, we could take this as some sort of slight, because, of course, next week, when it's the Eva MacDonald farewell dinner show, combined, etc.
So
well, only for a few months. You'll be going to Humberside. It could be worse than death, but still. We will hopefully be having the Yorkshire puddings from that point of view, so you can obviously compare and contrast it. Eloise, any thoughts from yourself you want to put to Abigail, or indeed William, either? I mean, they've got a phone between them, so they're easily to get handled.
I want to ask William, actually.
Let me send you over to him.
Okay. Thanks.
That's what we call pregnant pause. He's there. I could have talked and filled, but I thought, no, let's just have some momentary silence there. And we'll think, oh, he must be a long way away. He's gone to the other end of Waverley Street Station.
Hi, William. I've always wanted to go to Scotland, preferably Glasgow, but I was wondering why I should go to Edinburgh instead.
It's much more scenic, and it's got a whole load more history.
Wow.
There you go.
Interesting line, that. That's very impressive. I mean, Eva, would you agree? Would you?
I've never been to Glasgow ever, so I've only ever been to Edinburgh because my grandfather came from Edinburgh, so that gave us the reason to go there.
I've only been to Glasgow once, and it was actually on television there for a Scottish television production, which I was roped into about various other things. Yeah. Strange sort of thing. It seemed okay as well. So it seemed okay.
Do we have a copy of this?
I don't know, actually. I really don't know. It was a thing called it was a judge thing. It was a sort of game show. So I've done two game shows as participant observer, obviously, but the other one was Natural Born Dealers. But I think it's probably lost somewhere in the mists of time. Bethany, would you like to put those last two questions? To William to start off with.
You're going to put them to Bethany too, aren't you? Abigail too.
Oh, yeah, both. You had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, it's been the best ever. Thank you so much for asking.
Wow. Will you please join us again sometime?
Yes, prontissimo.
This is nice. Do you think Abigail's going to be equally positive? We don't know. She might know.
Okay, I'll put her on now.
Yeah, this is good. We'll have that sort of yes or that. Eva, would you like to put those last two questions to Abigail LeMay, please?
Hello, Abigail.
Hi.
Have you had an interesting telephonic link with us today?
Yes, I have.
Fantastic. And I'm hoping we're going to hear
Don't
from
spill
you
the
soon.
Beer.
Don't spill the beer.
It'll run all the way down the hill.
Oh, I hope not. But yeah. Hopefully we'll be hearing from you soon.
Yeah, well, definitely I will be coming back on the show. Sorry, is that what you asked me?
Yes.
Yeah, but you see, the message gets across. You see, that's how geopolitics works, basically. People think they hear some question being asked. Completely different question entirely. You know, Eva's probably asking about existential psychoanalysis. To Eva and to Abigail and to William and to everybody, a round of applause, please. Up next, Scarborough. Someone mentioned you were up alone. I could feel the trouble coursing through your veins. Now I know it's got a hold. Just a phone call left unanswered had me sparking now. These cigarettes won't stop me wondering where you are. Don't let go. Keep a hold. If you look into the distance, there's a house upon the hill, guiding like a lighthouse. It's a place where you'll be safe to feel our grace, cause we've all made mistakes. If you've lost your way, yeah, I'll leave the light on. What's been on your mind? Lately you've been searching for a darker place to hide. That's alright.
But if you carry on abusing, you'll be robbed from us. I refuse to lose another friend to drugs. Just come home. Don't let go. If you look into the distance, there's a house upon the hill, guiding like a lighthouse. It's a place where you'll be safe to feel our grace, cause we've all made mistakes. If you've lost your way, I will leave the light on.
And people will find it if your light is left on. That's why you leave the light on. Thank you, Tom Walker. A light is always left on in the Spa Complex Scarborough because every year there is an event that is, quite frankly, unmissable for any fans of genre, TV, gaming, in all sorts of ways. We were introduced to this a few years ago and we were so blown away with it, it's become a must, in red ink attend in all sorts of ways. It's Sci-Fi Scarborough, and joining us now from Scarborough, no less, it's Steve Dickinson. How are you, Steve?
I'm great, thank you. Hello, everyone.
It seems like only yesterday we had our first tentative kind of chats with your good self after Ed Fortune from Starburst had said, get yourself over to Sci-Fi Scarborough. And now it's like, as I say, a regular sort of aspect in our life and times and so on. So, great material. And the connections get even better because as Eloise Sheehan, who hopefully will be joining us this year on the reporting team, Steve, even though it's going to be the day after she's handed in her dissertation...
Okay.
And the day before, oh no, it's Sci-Fi Weekend, you have another convention event that's going to. I mean, how many conventions and events?
I seem to have booked them all in the same place, confused. Anyway,
but it, for our purposes, Sci-Fi Scarborough is taking place certainly on the 6th and 7th of April 2019. And we'll be coming up on the 6th to sort out all manner of other bits and pieces. Bethany, keen science fiction fan, not sure about her itinerary is yet. Who knows?
I'm busy, I'm sorry.
Abigail, likewise. Eva will be performing in Humberside.
I will be, unfortunately.
But, Eloise, you did point out that one of the guests in Sci-Fi Scarborough is indeed a graduate of this very University of Lincoln.
Yeah, he is. Chris Rankin. I'm pretty sure that is his name in the Harry Potter film.
Exactly. So yeah. It's nice to see that it's all coming together and will continue to do that. But Steve, talk to us about Sci-Fi Scarborough and why we do like to geek beside the seaside.
Well, you know, this is the sixth consecutive year that we've been doing Sci-Fi Scarborough, and it's just came back for us as far as. You know, I guess our content, people that want to get involved, the feedback we get, you know, take it all on board and dissect the event afterwards, you know, and spend all year putting it back together again as big and better as we can, really. I mean, we've sort of, the venue is sort of the capacity as far as content goes, but we always find ways of shoehorning more stuff in or switching it up, you know, moving things around and bringing new things in because that's, you know, that's the one thing that will keep people coming back, as well as the absolutely stunning Victorian venue where it's held and the location on the seafront. You know, everyone absolutely loves that.
Keeps it fresh. Now let's do a little sort of straw poll here. Eloise.
Hello.
We'd identified that you've never been up to Edinburgh.
I have not.
Have you ever made it to Scarborough?
I haven't. It's like I don't go anywhere, isn't it?
Yeah, but you're from London, so that's exactly. Bethany, likewise?
Nope, not at all. No,
Solihull to Scarborough?
I know.
That little waterback, right?
You should.
Eva, Scarborough?
I don't think I have, no.
Wow.
I can't remember.
Well, I mean, as I said, we're adopting a slightly different routine this year, Steve, because in previous years, obviously, I've come down to you. I've headed south from Teesside. This time round, the likelihood is I'll be coming up from Lincoln. I know, drastic, you know, but who knows? It means we'll be crossing the Humber Bridge. But looking at what wonderful things we've got, as well as Chris Rankin, Ross O'Hennessy, Lord of Bones in Game of Thrones, it even rhymes. Yeah. Hugo Myatt, the guard, the dungeon master in Nightmare, and so on. Jeff Cummins, illustrator of it. Hetty Heyridge from Red Dwarf, of course. Mark Dexter, also from Red Dwarf. I'm sensing a theme here. And Willie Coppen from Return of the Jedi and Willow. And Andrew Lee Potts, what's not to love when you've got Primeval? Ark, of course. Anomaly Research Center, very important. Caroline Blakiston is also there. I mean, it just gets better and better.
Caroline's an amazing coup for us. I've been after Caroline for a while, and I've been talking.
Not in a strange stalkery way. I just want to make that point clear.
In a booking for the event way, and just because she's such a wonderful actress, and she's been around so long, she's done some amazing stuff, and I've heard some of these stories about her on the circuit about what she's like with the fans, and she's so engaging and so fantastic, and I know, you know, it's like I do my research and make sure, you know, I'm going to bring people to the event that are going to be nice.
Mon Mothma.
To the punters, and the fact that she is, you know, she's coming is a really cool thing for us.
It's great. Now, the one absence I see, and I think it's really, no John Campling.
I know. John has been with us for
many years. Exactly.
He was with us from year two upwards to year five last year. There is such things overkill sometimes with guests. I mean, some conventions have exactly the same guests on every single year. They do, and it's one of those things I've gone, actually, this year we really need to give John
freshen it up, exactly. It's not that we're putting him out to pasture, it's just, you know, sometimes there's only so many things you can do with a wizard and a wand, so let's bring in Chris Rankin. Don't worry, we'll look after him, we'll do a phone link with him, etc. Bethany, questions that you want to put to Steve Dickinson?
Yeah, of course. So this is the sixth year running, is that correct? Yeah. So I was just wondering, what's different this year? Was it just bigger and better than ever?
We're changing up the ocean room, which is the big first floor room, up on the above the trading hall. In there we're having a lot more props this year and photo ops. We had a lot of content in there last year, a lot of people who were creators in there doing talks and stuff like that, which went down great. But again, you know, you've got to change it up. So we've got our local NYPD, they're called North Yorkshire Props Department. They're based in Scarborough. They've been building and beavering away all year because I've had them primed on this. We had a good chat about it a while ago. And they're going to be building a whole load of photo ops for people to go and have a picture taken with. So it's just a nice thing to do. And there's going to be a lot of cosplayer groups in there, the costuming groups as well, like Sentinel Squad and 99th Garrison. And then our favourite two Jedis to the hilt are going to be in there doing their Jedi Fight Academies. They're going to do a new Space Pirates themed fighting training this year, and then they do some magic and stuff on stage, and they will host the room as well. So that room will become more of a sort of ongoing theatrical event throughout the day, rather than somewhere people wander in and out of and just go and have a chat with someone. So that's the main change this year. We're bringing back the fan film theatre as well. Which is something that we had in the first two or three years. Obviously, with the advent of technology and social media, there's a lot more people out there creating their own films at home, in their own bedroom, in their little studios, and there's some amazing things out there. You know, Star Trek ones, Star Wars movies as well, like Star Wars Dresker, Star Wars Legends, Distant Echo, and there's one called Stormtroopers. Go and have a look at it. Look it up on Facebook. Just type in Stormtroopers, and it'll come up. And someone's made this, you know, just off their own back. It's amazing. So we want to give a platform for those guys, again, to come back, show their films, you know, maybe even do a little talk if they want. So, yeah, it's looking good.
We have currently been looking at the YouTube promo for last year's 2018 event. Eloise, you clocked up a fair number of conventions, often actually working as part of those fantastically an underrated group of people, the ambassadors, who actually make sure that people say, I want to have an autograph, so-and-so, and so you can sort out all sorts of other bits and pieces. So what are your thoughts so far about Sci-Fi Scarborough, what you've seen so far?
It just looks really good. It looks it seems like a slightly smaller one than the MCMs, but it looks as fun and that as all the others.
Small and even better value for money.
Yeah, we're small to medium. We want it to be a large event. There's a lot of, like the MCMs, I mean, nothing wrong with these huge events in the arenas, but they can get hot, they can get claustrophobic, and they can get packed out. So you can't really, you know, enjoy it, whereas with the spa complex. It's 1/4 mile long. There's loads of areas. You can wander in and out as you please. You know, it's a wristbanded job. Security's fairly lax, you know, when it comes to, you know, people leaving and coming back and what kind of weaponry they bring and stuff like that. You know, we're trying to keep it easy for everyone. And it's a nice event for people to go take their families with them, and take anyone that may have any disabilities with them. You know, it's a very accessible venue, great for kids with ADHD and autism. I mean, we've had a lot of compliments on that in the past, you know, so that's the kind of thing, you know, that's the kind of pitch we're aiming at, because I've been to a lot of events, you know, like you guys have, and it's been really uncomfortable and really claustrophobic. And I don't have anxiety, but I felt anxious in these places, you know, and that's the one thing we won't do. We'll always make sure everyone's got a safe environment to enjoy Sci-Fi Scarborough.
I think that sort of is endorsed me to say that there's another event we were toying around with the idea of actually checking out in Liverpool. It's not going to happen because, again, we're just thinking, but, you know, who knows? Yeah. We've still got Sci-Fi Weekend, and we'll be talking about that, and, of course, Sci-Fi London. Eva,
yeah.
Seems to me they could do with the benefit of an entertainer. Have you ever done any science fiction songs in your sets?
I've not done any science fiction songs, no. I don't think there are any.
Oh, come now. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Is that science fiction?
I think so. I think you'll find something fantasy.
Musical
fantasy
theatre,
all
sorts of definitely.
Yeah. Anyway, what questions have you got for Steve?
No, Steve, I was just going to ask, is there anything that you're particularly looking forward to with this event, or anything that we can look out for in general?
I mean, again, you know, it's for me, it's always the people that turn up and attend the event, because they spend, you know, about 50-60% of them spend all year on their bills for their cosplay, and they turn up and they look incredible. I mean, we have the cosplay competition every year where we have that awards for best male, best female, best boy, best girl. Seriously thinking of having best baby, best male and female baby, because, you know, people, so many families come and so many people dress their babies up, and, it, you know, that. We've got to hand some awards out to these kids, you know, that, and these families. So yeah, we're really looking forward to that. And we're adding some more gaming in this year. We've got a local company called Crash Labs, who normally do our Minecraft. We're switching it up again with them. And they're putting on Fortnite Battle Royale tournaments, which are incredibly popular. I know my kids play it. That's going to go crazy in the Suncourt Suite where the gaming is. And again, I'm just looking forward to meeting all the guests. You know, it's like, I've met a couple of these before, maybe once or twice, and the rest of them I've not met before. So it's nice, you know, actually meet them in person, have a chat, you know, and take them around the venue and take them around the event and show it off.
Do some radio interviews with Siren Radio, Midweek Drive. It's the media demands are just phenomenal for that point of view. It makes Scarborough come alive. Eloise, are you a cosplayer?
I was when I was younger.
When you were a baby?
No.
Dress you up as a...
When I was about 15.
Oh, right. Because an awful lot of Harley Quinns, I noticed, in Darth Vader.
Doctor Who.
So, yeah. I mean, Eloise is a passionate, and I mean passionate, Doctor Who fan. We're talking Paul McGann's serious issues with respect to Paul McGann.
Why?
Exactly. So, I mean, what can Eloise look forward to in terms of the Who sort of moments, Steve? I mean, apart from obviously a good self and so on.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Who guests go, we really struggle with Doctor Who guests. Every year I ask Tom Baker's agent, because Tom's my doctor, and Tom's now not doing anything really outside of London. Much better, he doesn't want to travel, you know. And as far as, you know, I've been trying to get Paul McGann, obviously. They're just so expensive. You know,
well, you could always use the line, I've now spoken to Eloise Sheehan, who has indeed met Paul McGann on several instances.
Oh, really?
And
yes.
Indeed, Paul McGann actually recognised you. And
embarrassingly enough, yes,
exactly. Yeah.
Really? Well,
it's all about a tattoo, Steve. It's all about a tattoo. Yeah. You could ask her about that. And, you know, exactly.
A DW tattoo, or is it Paul McGann's face?
Neither. It's his name I have on the bottom of my leg.
Is it a signature or just his name?
It's a signature that he wrote.
And you've inked it?
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Fantastic. I love that. How old were you when you did that?
Sorry, pardon?
How old were you when you had that done?
About 5 months ago.
I know. You see, that's commitment. That is commitment. You've got to say, Steve. You know, you're talking...
We talked about having Sci-Fi Scarborough tattoos, all of us, on one of our shoulders, you know, and we just like... I get killed on this for doing that, but I'm actually seriously considering getting the Sci-Fi Scarborough tattoo. It'd be such a laugh, but...
There's only so much you can actually do for the cause, really, from that point of view.
No.
I mean, if it was Sci-Fi Scarborough with Paul McGann, then, yeah, you know, you might see it. Anyway, Sci-Fi Scarborough, are tickets still available, Steve? And can people actually book online by going to sci-fiscarborough.co.uk?
They can, yeah. Head along to the website, click on the link, take you to Scarborough Spa, get Sci-Fi Scarborough, get the tickets bought. You know, you can turn up on the day. If you're around Scarborough at any point, pop into Mojo's, my cafe, Tuesday to Saturday, 10 till 5. We're selling tickets here with no booking fee. So that's always a popular thing, because the booking fees are always silly at these venues, aren't they? Not one to talk about my venue, but it's really annoying. I end up having to do a lot of arguing about it, but that's another thing.
It's another thing entirely. And let's give another promo for your cafe, please, because it's something we need to do a location report from sometime in the near future. The cafe, of course, is...
It's Mojo's Music Cafe.
Mojo's Music Cafe.
Mojo's Music Cafe, yeah. It's pretty cool place.
Eva, are you saddened that you'll be performing in Humberside rather than joining us for the Sci-Fi Scarborough event?
Yeah, you know, I've not been to a sci-fi convention or anything like that.
Well, then we...
I know.
One day. Exactly. Unless, of course, you can get some time off.
Well, I will be quite close by, actually.
You know, it's just on the other side of the Humber Bridge, really. Where are you performing?
On the other side of the Humber Bridge.
Quite literally,
so
exactly.
Literally, I could just try and get the day off.
So, you know, exactly. Or you get a jet ski boat and actually come up the coast.
Yeah, I can do. Just, you know, I'll come on a private jet ski.
it's a way for, you know, it is a line forward. And Bethany, any thoughts for yourself?
About Sci-Fi Scarborough? In general. Well, it sounds brilliant. I'm very excited if I can come. Hopefully. I'll rearrange things, especially.
No pressure, Steve. But and Marina Sirtis, did you meet her when she was in pantomime in Mapplethorpe? Or was it Mapplethorpe? It was in some sort of...
Bridlington,
exactly.
Yeah, it was only half an hour at the road. Yeah. I might have.
I just wanted to follow through, because I know after last year, when we were so excited that Marina Sirtis, of course, who's Deanna Troi in Star Trek Next Generation, was going to be in pantomime. I mean, clearly, again, a slight embarrassment perhaps with respect to Paul McGann too. Steve actually has a life-size Marina Sirtis cutout, you know, and he's proud of it. It's good. Did you connect, and was she in any way sort of slightly nervous?
No. She wasn't really. She's such a cool, confident customer. Mm-hmm. We actually went on the day before we had tickets booked for the Panto. It was the Saturday the 29th, I think. On the Friday the 28th, she did a special evening, one-off Star Trek stories with Marina Sirtis.
Excellent.
In the theatre. And they thought about 50 people would turn up. We're going to hold it in the cafe. 300 people, you know, like we do. And we went through and listened. She was fantastic. She did a Q&A. She chatted about the show. You know, she's very funny, very engaging. Don't take any nonsense, which I love about her. You know, that's the way people should be. And, you know, afterwards she was doing autographs outside, so took the opportunity to actually speak to her. And she was like, I met you in Birmingham, didn't I? We had a picture taken. I was like, yes, like that, you know, like trying to hold it together, because I was obviously, when I was in my 20s, I was like,
major Marina
Sosa. If it helps,
Steve, Bethany actually shared a science fiction seminar group with somebody whose parents actually named her Deanna.
Oh, yeah.
But they misspelt Deanna, and it's Deanna.
No.
I know. It's ever since then, Deanna has had to sort of regale the tale. You know, whenever I was named after the ship's counsellor on the USS Enterprise.
Yeah. Well, you know, we spoke about the possibility of a future, you know, appearance with us, and, you know, she never said no, but she said, look, just send me a tweet later. I thought, I've tweeted you loads of times, you know. Anyway, she replied later that night, and then I got the notification, Marina Sirtis now follows you on Twitter. And I was like, I was stood at the bar in my local, and I just downed a pint straight away, went to the outside, and, you know, ran around like a child screaming. But, you know, I was just like, I love the woman so much. She's so fantastic, you know, and I'm desperate to have her as a guest, so I'm working on that now. So I can actually, we can message each other direct now, which is, it's a brilliant thing. The rest of the guys on the team are like, is this a good idea? And I'm like, yeah, it's fine. When you're drunk, do not message her. And I'm like,
No, please, don't, exactly.
I did, but I'm a lovely drunk. I'm one of those, you know, I'm not all weird drunk. I'm not an angry drunk. I'm a lovely drunk. So I was really lovely, and I just said thank you for the show, and I'll see you tomorrow at the pantomime. I'm coming back, I'm bringing my kids, you know, and they loved it, you know.
For every night of the performance.
And I picture sticker with it again, you know, so.
No, of course not. You know, you see, I mean, that's a criteria, Eloise. You know, you've got it's a continuum, you know, to work through that. Who knows what's going to happen.
You need to get to
to my level where I've got a shrine in the kitchen now to with my cardboard cutout and pictures of me.
Yeah, it's going to be scary now, Steve. You know, I mean, we have to sort of.
Oh, just stick with the chassis.
It's a joyous time, and so is Sci-Fi Scarborough, and that's one of the reasons why we're there. We'll also be talking. In fact, the week beforehand, I think we are actually involved with the Sci-Fi Weekender, which is in Sheffield. Sam Stone will be talking about that. She might be bringing a special guest along as well, who has had connections with UFO. And Liftoff in the past. If I said her, her name was Aisha, would that sort of...
Aisha Brooks?
Yes.
Yay!
Yeah.
Fantastic.
In fact, actually, Steve, any questions you'd like the team to put to Aisha as and when she arrives in the studio? Because I mean, we can relay that sort of excitement to her. So any thoughts about her time in UFO or whatever?
Oh, yeah, I mean, it's just... Yeah, it's one of those things where you want to talk to anyone that's worked, you know, on any of the younger shows, you know, find out what it was like, you know, behind the scenes, you know, how long it took to shoot certain things.
So what was it like behind the scenes? And given that actually in UFO, Shadow is actually set in a TV studio because it was a secret agent for Supreme Headquarters Alien Defence Organisation, behind the scenes is quite metaphysical, basically.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right now, Eloise is going to put those last two questions to you because I know she's been waiting for this. They didn't give me the chance to actually ask you know, Abigail and Williams, so let's hope we go for Steve Dickinson. Go, Eloise.
Have you had a reasonably good telephonic link with us today?
Well, I always have an excellent telephonic link with you guys every time.
Great. And will you be joining us again sometime?
I would love to, whenever you like.
That'll be April. April the 6th. I'm sure I'll do one beforehand. Look, in the trees.
It's in the trees. It's coming.
Hands of love. I'll get you. In a few moments' time, Annette Andre will be joining us from San Diego with another one of her wonderful audio thoughts, notelets and so on, with a whole heap of other things. In fact, the Annette Andre autobiography is currently being bed red at this very moment in time by Bethany, who's whizzing through the whole sort of sequence. It's great. We also got Alan Stevens, who will be talking about his edited version of Celestial Toy Room, at least the version of Celestial Toy Room magazine that he actually edited and was guest editor on, which is awesome, and all to do with matters to do with Doctor Who and so on. Louis Savvy will be talking about Sci-Fi London, and Graham Harper will be joining us to wrap up the whole sequence. Plus, of course, we've got Sam Stone talking about the joys of Sci-Fi Weekender, which we'll also be heading off to, and even more on Siren Radio. Frank the Eva, would you choose to go anywhere else if you were actually tuned in to that dial? I mean, there's no reason to actually go.
Not.
Well,
that sounds a little bit
sarcastic for you, Eva. I mean, I think there's definitely no reason whatsoever why you shouldn't continue to stay with Siren Radio. Because,
no, of course we'll stay with Siren Radio.
Thank you. And that's why she's hammered the desk just to
sort of emphasize
it. It wasn't Bethany. She's done it again. Oh Lord.
It wasn't me this time.
You don't have to say a word. I've seen it in your eyes. I wanna be touching you. You realize I see it in your smile. You wanna be holding me too. So don't try to say the things you feel inside. Baby, just hold on tight. If the feeling's right, stay with me and we can share the night. 'Cause I'm taking a chance on you. Taking a chance on you. Don't go breaking my heart in two. I'm taking a chance on you. It's hard to know what to say when the hour slips away. Wanna be holding you more. You have to go, but I want you to know, never had this before. So don't try to say the things you feel inside. Baby, just hold on tight. If the feeling's right, stay with me and we can share the night. 'Cause I'm taking a chance on you. Taking a chance on you. Don't go breaking my heart in two. I'm taking a chance on you.
If you don't take a chance, well, frankly, life isn't worth living, especially if you need to actually press the button like so.
Annette Andre, ace actress and top correspondent, now live on the Midweek Drive.
Yes, absolutely. Annette, how's San Diego? Are you coping with this global heat wave we're currently having in Lincoln, England, where the temperatures are phenomenal?
Really?
Mm.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if I give you normally, I will never actually remove the jumper until it gets around to May. It's gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's frightening. That sort of thing.
I didn't know. I haven't been. I haven't been looking at seeing my daughter's been away, so I haven't been talking to the family.
It's been like summer across the country. Edinburgh, they're sitting out in the streets of Edinburgh, literally drinking like some sort of crazy European capital. I mean, is Eloise, is there a heat wave or is there a heat wave?
Yes, and it's horrible.
Isn't that something? Well, we've had really cold weather since Christmas. Mm. I mean, for here, cold. I mean, quite cold. And a lot of rain, which was, we're happy about because we really needed it. And now this week has become a little bit more gentle and the days are warmer. And lovely and sunny.
Well, we also have to say hats off to the sheer wonderment of Arthur Weingarten, who correctly predicted the Oscar-winning, Academy Award-winning joy of Green Book. Because I think did the business there.
Yes, he did. I was so pleased about that.
Mm. Yeah, and it's great. And now we're going to listen to you actually share some thoughts, because already the team—that's of course Eloise, Eva, and Bethany have been perusing Where Have I Been All My Life? Not in a sort of rhetorical point of view, because that, of course, is the must-get autobiography of your good self, with, as I say, George Best, Richard Burton, Maurice Chevalier, Kenneth Cope, John Crawford, Tony Curtis, Sammy Davis Jr. So many wonderful folk there. Where are you going to take us this month, Annette?
Ah, well, I'm taking you. It's called What Elephant? In Jumbo, the 1960s Technicolor Circus musical, the comic actor Jimmy Durante deadpans the now classic line, "What elephant?" when asked why he's standing next to that huge creature. I can empathize with the Schnoz, as he was called. Since publishing my memoir, I've also found myself attached to an elephant that no one seems inclined to acknowledge. I'm talking about the two experiences that I record involving my encounters with the occult and the complete lack of attention they've received in dozens of reviews and readers' comments. I'm fascinated and puzzled by this silence. An embargo on a subject that has traditionally been met with adamantly vocal defenders and detractors of things that go bump in the night. The incidents are true. I mean, the details, as I relate them in the book, happened to me exactly as I set them down. In the first, which I'm certain was a revenge from the grave, bolted me out of a deep sleep, the invisible hands pressing me into a black abyss, belonged to a woman who had married my longtime boyfriend and, unknown to me, had died hours before in a helicopter crash. Still, according to mutual friends, consumed with a corrosive jealousy at our relationship. My second encounter with the supernatural took place when I moved into my new house and discovered that along with the mortgage, I inherited a ghostly lodger. Somehow, I also knew this spirit was female, and over the years of our joint tenancy, she performed her poltergeistly antics, awakening guests with a firm shaking, or hiding one of my slippers at the back of a closet. In time, I even looked forward to what prank she'd come up with next. But all bets were off when I was about to give birth to my daughter, and a set of curtains I'd hung in her nursery that day were stained with a thick, blood-red substance that couldn't be removed by me or the specialists I sent the curtains to. To deepen the mystery, the stains resisted all chemical tests as to their origin. Let me say here that it's not my intention to convert non-believers, but, as I did in the book, to give a truthful accounting of what I believe is the existence of another dimension when these mystifying events are generated. I make my case by asking, how would we have advanced from thinking that the earth is the center of the universe, or that bad humors cause disease, without the inventions of the telescope and the microscope that factually convinced both boffins and the rest of us that alternate possibilities existed? Let me offer some eyewitness examples of otherworldly interventions that have had the Darting Thomases scratching their heads. The night before John Lennon's murder outside his home in Manhattan's Dakota Apartments, the occupants of a flat a floor above his were awakened by the pitiful keening of a woman with a thick Irish brogue, saying over and over, "Save him, save him." Research proved that in 1910, a 17-year-old maid called Mary Riley had hanged herself in the flat, and that over the years she appeared multiple times just before one of the building's occupants died, including the actress Judy Holliday. Another case to ponder is a severely wounded World War II Lancaster bomber pilot returning to his base after a raid across the Channel. With his co-pilot dead, he was certain that he'd crash into the sea as he felt himself losing consciousness. Suddenly, he heard a voice telling him to take his hands off the controls and instantly felt the crippled plane regain altitude and fly on course to his airfield. The bomber came in for a perfect landing. The ground crew found the pilot unconscious and the fuel tanks bone dry. And then there's the impossible-to-ignore story of Jenny Curran, a New England housewife with just a high school education and little interest in books. Yet, in the early years of the 20th century, she wrote 6 highly acclaimed novels, one of which was a bestseller about England in the Middle Ages. This extraordinary output was, by her account, and to those who witnessed her, automatically writing the novels while seemingly in a trance, the channeling of a woman called Patience Worth. Patience had been born in Dorset and emigrated to the Kansas Prairie with her parents, where she was killed in 1878 by an Indian raiding party while in her mid-20s. Although Jenny Curran couldn't explain how her literary partnership came about, she and Patience Worth became fast friends for the remainder of Jenny's life. As I've said, all this is by no way meant to convince the skeptics of a nether world. The modern physics of quantum mechanics allows for a body to be in 2 places at the same time and makes a case that thoughts can move solid objects, concepts that have waited for their time to come and admit that the proof is still waiting in the pudding. And by the way, after a highly dramatic confrontation with my ghostly lodger, she vacated the premises for a number of years until my husband Arthur moved into the house and was thrust headfirst into a kitchen broom cupboard by a solid whack on his back. "That's not funny," I heard him call out. "What's not funny?" I asked from the sitting room above. Now, what do you think? What do you think, Alex?
Extraordinary, Annette. I mean, again, you know, anything that's got Patience Worth and indeed quantum dynamics in it has to be sort of superlatively wonderful. We have been joined, as if by some kind of mystical magic, by 2 additional co-presenters today. We've got the fabulous Sam Stone. How are you, Sam?
Oh, good evening. I'm fine, thank you, Alex.
And we've been teasing ahead to this. I mean, Steve Dickinson from Sci-Fi Scarborough was very, very impressed with the guests you brought along, not only to share the Stone tapes with, but I believe she might well have actually connected with your good self in an episode of Jason King. It's Aisha Brough. How are you, Aisha?
I'm fine. How are you?
Very good indeed. Now, have you met Annette Andre?
I'm not sure, Annette. I think we did meet many, many years ago in the 70s.
Your name is familiar.
Yours too.
Well, there we are, you see. We've connected together all sorts of other bits and pieces. Actually, it's kind of destiny, because if I dial back the time to my own sort of period in the 70s, there was a Muriel Young who used to produce a programme called Liftoff, which, of course, was one of your key aspects when you were writing for Look In magazine. So it's just
That's right.
Win-win situation. That's before we even start on UFO and various other bits and pieces. But you did do it, Jason King.
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. That was directed by Jeremy Summers, and I got it because I was doing UFO. Do you remember Jeremy?
Yeah, of course I do.
Oh, yes, there you go. See, I'm sure we met, Annette, I'm sure.
Yeah. Because your name's familiar, so we met somewhere along the
way. We did.
Working, well, yeah, absolutely.
It's obviously...
Well, hello.
Hello to you, and it's lovely to speak to you finally again.
It's what we've established the programme for, so we'll admit to it. Annette actually goes and lives in San Diego. Aisha comes over here. We kind of connect telephonically. It's one planet, after all. That's the important thing.
How long were you in San Diego for, Annette?
Oh, we've been here about 5 years, and before that we were in upstate New York.
Ah, because I lived in Beverly Hills for 20 years, and I've come back here.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Yes, we lived there for a while, too, before that. Before New York, we were living between London and Beverly Hills.
That's funny, isn't it?
And we're delighted that you're back here, Aisha, obviously, because it makes Britain just a little bit greater when you're actually back
you
in the
are
country.
Nice.
It's critical.
Nice.
Okay. But has it anything to do with the current incumbent of the White House? Was that any reason at all in terms of you thought, I'm sorry, you know, when the Donald takes over, I'm out of here?
No, I was already mentally bruised after Bush. That was enough.
Right. Yeah. Little Bush or big Bush? Or
little,
both Bushes?
Little Bush.
Technically shrub.
Shrub did my head in.
Yeah. Eloise, any questions for Annette? Because you were particularly fascinated in the range of folk, and as somebody who has actually just been speaking to the sister of Gene Kelly...
His wife, actually.
Sorry. Research. What's research? You know, speaking to his widow, technically, I suppose. But anyway.
What's her name? Sorry. Because she and I were friends back in L.A., if it's the one I think.
Patricia Ward?
Oh, gosh. I can't remember. She was married to... Sandy Bennett. Oh. Sandy Bennett was with him for years and years and years.
I'm sure you'll check that out, anyways.
I will.
Anyway.
I
better not ask him that.
Yeah, could be a bit embarrassing.
Yes,
I mean, let's face
that.
It, you know, you're doing all of those sort of routines, you think, best not. Eloise, questions for Annette.
Hello. I was just having a look at your book, and I was just wondering about you working with Bob Hope.
Oh, yes. Briefly, but yes, in a sketch out there, and then later on, as I also say, I met him again a couple of times socially, one particularly, and he was really quite old by that stage, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not the years, Annette. It's the mileage. That's the key thing. Yeah, and besides, as you know, Annette, I've said this time and time again, we don't use the O word. We are chronologically gifted. Or experientially enhanced.
I did road to Hong Kong when I was 11.
Did you?
Yes.
There we are. I mean, Aisha, you are the gift that keeps on giving. This is the clear thing. I know the Stone Taste is going to be awesome, but it's produced from this point of view. Amazing. So any memories of road to Hong Kong?
I remember Bing Crosby and Bob Hope very well, yeah. I wasn't really aware, I was quite young, of how big they'd been. Then my mother said, oh, you've got to watch this and you've got to watch that. And they were lovely. Mm. And Joan Collins was in it then. She was the leading lady.
It's like my favourite film for Bing Crosby. So.
Really?
Yes.
We're bonding in so many delightful ways. It's great. Bethany, any thoughts or questions from yourself? I mean, you've been perusing all sorts of other bits and pieces, and we haven't really answered Annette's question about what do we think about ghosts? Can we exist in two places at the same time? Is there an ethereal presence in the studio? Or is it just the ghost of David Howe? I don't know. It's all right. He's not gone. He's still with us.
He will be with us again.
Exactly.
Oh, well, I was really enjoying reading, like, snippets of your book. I thought the last words were particularly poignant with the ghost light you were writing about. That was really good. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed that. And I was just wondering, what were your sort of industry highlights? Because I'm sure there's been so many.
What? You've got six weeks to at least.
Briefly, maybe.
Pretty expensive career.
I mean, yeah. Obviously, Annette, apart from your monthly slots with the Midweek Drive, I mean, I appreciate that, you know.
A little out of context and a bit difficult for me to pinpoint anything.
We'll come back to that. We'll leave that as a little like that. Eva, thoughts from yourself?
Hello, Annette. So with your book, because I think it was called Where Have I Been All My Life? How did you go about writing it? Like, how long did it take you to write it, and where did you sort of get inspiration for it? Forever?
Was it a lifetime?
A lifetime.
Very long time, and that finally got a spurt on last year, through the year.
And we need to have a sequel.
But it was a lot of research I had to do on myself, you know, because you just don't remember everything. And going back over masses and masses of clippings and photographs and diaries, which told me very little. I never used to write in diaries, which I was annoyed about, because I'd have gotten a whole lot more information from that if I had. But doing all those sorts of things, talking to friends and saying, do you remember anything or what? And it does take a long time. And I wasn't sure if I was actually going to do it, but I did. And
That's how.
And the world is a better place for it, Annette. That's what I say. Aisha, has there been an autobiography as yet, which we've missed?
No, I was just going to ask Annette something. Annette, did you find it difficult to, because I think the books that I've read that are, and I will read yours, that have really touched me are those where people really reveal themselves and are absolutely open. Was it very hard for you to actually, not tell the truth, but to really show your inner self?
Yes.
I thought
so. Yes. It's a very difficult thing and very quite painful sometimes and other times quite funny. And you can look at things different ways and things, you know, it does give you an insight into past times. But I had to make decisions because I did. That was one of the big things, to be honest. And I had to make decisions about would I put that in or would I not. And the other thing was too, I didn't want to do anything that would hurt people.
I was just going to say to you, that's where I am now. It's very, very difficult, isn't it? When it always involves somebody else. You don't mind saying something bad about yourself, but to say it about someone else is really difficult.
I tried to keep it all on me, really. You know.
Did you find that?
And there was enough. There was enough of that. You can't put everything in, so. You just choose the best ones, and I was trying to make it too as instructive, partly for people who wanted to be in our business, and maybe there were things they could learn.
Okay.
Because I think it's a different world today, and it wouldn't hurt them to know a little bit about our times. Also instructive in other ways, other things that I found. I mean, for example, I became a Buddhist, and so I speak about that a little bit. And I know that that's influenced some people to think again about different things without it becoming any sort of preaching thing, not at all.
I understand. I'm in exactly the same place as you. And for me, the spirituality is important because it's who we are now, and it's not about preaching, but if you can open a door and say to someone, well, look, this is the road that I traveled, and I think you will find
it made a big difference to me in my life.
I can imagine.
And it influenced my life, so therefore it was important that it did go in. And so there were odd little things along the way that I thought, no, I should talk about that, because it was all something that had a presence in my life in some form or another. It had made me change in certain ways. And I think that's instructive, and I think it's good to talk about and to see for yourself, has it made a difference? And yes, it did. It did make a difference to me. All the things that I put in all had an importance.
That's very helpful.
I'm particularly recovering from the time we actually met up with Peter Graves, but that's a different line entirely. We've talked about that beforehand.
You
know.
You would go back to that.
Mission impossible, still.
You would go back to that point.
Straight, buy the book, that's what I say. It's available from all good online sellers. Plus, of course, Why Have I Been All My Life? Just type it in. You'll find all sorts of other bits and pieces. Memoir by Annette André. It's awesome, absolutely. Book of the year, definitely. Every year. Until you release yours, Aisha, in which case...
We'll share.
Exactly. Last two questions for Annette, please. Bethany.
Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Oh, yes, I have, very.
Fab. And would you like to join us again sometime?
Yes, I would. And I'd also like to say it's very nice to speak to you again, Aisha, although we don't really remember, but I know that you are there somewhere along the way.
Yes, me too. It's been a joy. It really has.
Co-creators on the road to existence. That's what it's all about here. Co-creators on the road to existence.
Every hour, every day I'm learning more. The more I learn, the less I know about before. The less I know, the more I want to look around. Stars it well high, earth and trees beneath the light. The wind blows fragrant love, to cool the night for you and I. On the wing, the birds fly.
valley contains endless sea. Flower waits for honeybee, sunrise waits for life in me. Every hour, every day I'm learning more. The more I learn, the less I know about people. The less I know, the more I want to look around. Digging deep for clues on my ground. The fishes swim, my rivers run. We feel to feast, my eyes are full. Intoxicated, drinking from the loving cup of burning sun. In dreams I'll pray for baby taste, whispered in a weary face. Kisses sweet and warm embrace, another time, another place. Every hour, every day I'm learning more. The more I learn, the less I know about people. The less I know, the more I want to look around. Digging deep for clues,
six. 6:15 in Lincoln, England, and presumably the same time in the Forest of Dean in Gloucestershire. Is that right, Alan Stevens?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, the fine. Glad you actually said that. It's very important. Now, Alan, we're going to put you straight into the hot seat for this particular routine, because we're going to give you 65 seconds of music, and I'd like you to actually cast your creative ear over this and tell me exactly what this music actually reminds you of. I can't believe we had somebody in the studio send Mission Impossible. Alan. Yeah, please don't. It is, of course, the theme too.
UFO.
Thank you. Yeah. It's all right, Aisha. Don't worry. Why would you? What? It's easily confused. You know, are you doing Mission Impossible with Jim, or are you doing Ed Bishop and UFO?
I never saw that bit of the stuff. When would I see that?
Yeah. We should have gone with the theme for Liftoff, obviously, but never mind. In the studio, Alan, we have Aisha Brough, Sam Stone, Eloise Sheehan, Bethany Gulliver.
Thank you.
She's on her travels. And Eva MacDonald.
Hello.
Wow. It's like a pentagram of pulchritudinous fantasticness, which is great stuff there. So, Alan, as the editor of Celestial Tire Room and somebody who has had a lot of good positive things to say about UFO, would you like to quiz Aisha about life, the universe, or anything else at this stage?
You don't ask me about theme tunes.
my cat called Aisha.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that... any connection with me, or is it just a coincidence?
I think Alan's cat is prone to look out for extraterrestrial objects.
Oh, okay.
And regularly will say things like, Straker, or something.
Oh, okay.
It can act a bit alien-like. So,
what kind of cat?
Tortie.
Tortie, and I've got a
shell.
I've got a Bengal.
They are technically mad, you know, tortoise shells.
Well, the person it's named after is sort of bordering.
That's technical. Anyway, let us move on from that. It's just as well we cleared that up in the rehearsal for the Stone Tapes, isn't it, Sam? Because if I played the UFO theme then, all over the place, right?
I begin to wonder when you said
did you recognise?
I just said tonight, UFO.
Never mind. It's okay. Maybe we would just prefer the end titles.
I was questioning myself.
Oh, dear.
We're off on the road to Hong Kong. Eloise, you've had a chance to read the latest edition of Celestial Tie Room, and as a Who fan of unfeasibly wonderful time and length, etc., whose grandfather effectively helped design, in fact, wasn't he? He was head of facility.
He was head of set, yes.
Head of set, exactly.
Oh, was he? Right.
So, would you like to quiz Alan Stevens on the latest awesome Celestial
Tie Room? What's your grandfather's
name? My grandfather, Bill Dennis.
Bill Dennis? What did he wear? Was he wearing the 60s, isn't it? Or 70s?
70s, I think, because we were talking.
It was from First Doctor to Fourth Doctor.
Say it again.
From First Doctor to Fourth Doctor.
From
right.
William Hartnell to Tom Baker.
Yes.
Let me just write his name down, because I think I saw some correspondence recently with him having an argument with Douglas Canfield. So could you tell me what it is again? His name?
Bill Dennis or William Dennis. It depends how he felt at the time.
Work for the BBC, understandably. Yes. See, if he'd been employed by Granada Television, he was doing pop shows and various other bits and pieces. Clearly, on that basis.
Oh, he did Top of the Pops.
What more chilled?
Yeah. Oh, Laura did Top of the Pops, yeah. Bill Dennis, that's very interesting.
Yeah. Well, that set the scene in a kind of spooky way. Anyway, Eloise, questions for Alan, please. Having read at least one article in Celestial Tyrone,
yes,
which I thought was very impressive.
I read the last article about the new season of Jodie Whittaker.
Dr. Clueless.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yes, I thought that was really good because I liked how honest she was.
Yeah.
In that, actually, about how she normally watches Doctor Who because she finds the Doctor quite attractive. So I thought that was. I like the articles because they're quite really honest.
Yeah. Exactly. Honest articles. And Celestial Tie Room, for folk who might have thought, where has this wonderful thing been, this sort of fancy, etc., it actually takes us way back to the early days of the Doctor Who Appreciation Society, or as you'd like to refer to it, DWAS.
It's actually the longest running club magazine in the history of the world. So it's been going since 1926, which is pretty good, isn't it?
Exactly.
But I only do three a year. I do February, May, and a June, July bumper issue. And other ones are done by other people because I put a lot of work into it. And if I was doing them all, it would kill me. It would kill me dead. It's a lot of work.
Yeah, we don't want an expired Alan Stevens. I mean, how would we ever get more books from a TELUS publications put together if it was the case? Isn't that right, Sam? You know, I mean, you know, we need Alan alive and thriving.
Yes, I would say so. Since your books are very good sellers for TELUS, we'd like to keep you alive.
Exactly.
I think we're very young, though.
So says the publisher.
So says we all, in many ways. You know, but
Alan, I have two new animals that you can name after. I have a Bambi and a Bijou.
Wow.
A Bijou?
Yes, Bambi and Bijou. They're both little white chihuahuas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, see?
Who would have thought that Aisha from UFO and Liftoff, which one did you, I mean...
Because
Liftoff was very... Sorry, Alan, let's just talk over each other, shall we? Good radio technique.
So I'm just looking up, I'm just scanning my... master plan article now. My book now. Whole notes just to look up Bill Dennis. But carry on.
That's fine. I was going to say, Aisha, given the push between obviously the popular, fantastic world of Muriel Young and Liftoff, your column in Look In, or indeed UFO, which one would you say, yeah, that's the one I enjoyed, or was it a case of none of them? I just did it because they were employment at the time.
No, I love to sing. That was a pleasure. That was something that I did from a child. So that was my first love. And acting was something that I just aspired to and I really, really enjoyed. I can't say I liked one thing more than another. There was
oh, hang on. This is Aisha from UFO.
Yes, Alan.
We just realised, Alan.
You know, sometimes you think we're in a different dimension, Aisha. Apologies for that. It gets carried away.
I think I was talking about the cat.
I didn't realise you had this calibre of guest on your show.
Oh, honestly.
Oh, yeah, I think Aisha is superb in I love the little wave she gives in the title sequence. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I like the one of your best episodes is The Cat with 10 Lives, and you pick the cat up and it scratches you. What else happened? I love the hair. The hair is fantastic. Well, you never got to wear a purple wig, did you?
I did. I was on the moon for one episode.
Which one was that?
I don't remember.
Suffice it to say, she was on the moon for one episode.
Well, I'm going to have damn both of them now, aren't I?
There was a fight sequence. I remember that.
Oh, ah, yeah, that could have been Mindbender then. Were you fighting a Mexican?
I don't know.
It was early Donald Trump. This is what we're trying to get to. You know, I mean, was there a war?
Why was there a Mexican on the moon?
Yeah, these Mexican gunfighters turned up on the moon instead of attacking the moon base girls.
Mm. I don't know. I don't remember it.
If she does, she's put it out of her memory, and now it's like Vietnam. You know, work our way through that process.
Not good. Yeah. Not good. I don't remember when it was, but we were in the part of the control room, and there was a fight sequence. I remember. I don't remember a Mexican. No, no.
No, really. What happens is there's this I think it's a sort of stone, and people who touch it suddenly start hallucinating stuff, and one guy who's a big fan of comic books, he starts hallucinating. The Mexican gunfighters, and he goes into the control room, the moon base, and he starts attacking the women, thinking that they are.
Because it was a fight sequence, I remember.
Mm. Yeah, that would make sense. So the scenes with you would have been with the guy who was suffering from the delusion, and then you would have been replaced. With the Mexican, so which Mexican gunfighter were you? Were you the one with the big knife, the funny teeth, or the moustache?
I don't know.
You should find that out. That would be a great question, wouldn't it? You know, which Mexican gunfighter did
we'll
I play?
We'll have to sit and look and screenshot this, Aisha. Yeah. We'll have to do that, I think.
It's a way of keeping us active in all sorts of ways. Helen, it's great stuff.
You're disturbed.
You've got to go back now, haven't you, and watch the show.
Hey ho, and this is why one of the reasons we felt it was important that Alan actually joined us on the programme today. Actually, I'm thinking about things being coming together, one of our first ever co-hosts and presenters back in the days when we used to do this in London was Ed Bishop. So that was way back then.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I met Ed Bishop.
He came in on his motorbike.
But the point is, though, one of the reasons why we called Aisha was because we were watching UFO at the time, and it was named after, in part, Aisha, the moon base, or the ground control woman. You.
Oh.
So that cat is in part named after you.
Well, that's very nice. How old is the cat?
Cat's now about 10.
Oh, all right. Give the cat my love.
She'll be thrilled when I tell her.
Yes.
You see, Alan, that's the importance of reading the schedules and the running order. It all fits together perfectly.
Zukov, yeah. My other cat, Zukov, was in love with Patricia Helfer. Whenever we work on a book about Battlestar Galactica, and whenever we put a picture down of her, you know, she was a blonde girl, he likes blondes, he would go and sit on it.
Oh.
And you see, that's what basically means that when it comes to competition in this whole system, the likes of Sarah Cox, there's no competition really, is there? You know, let's face it, you know, she'd kill, our producers would kill to have this on national radio too. It's understandable, you know. Here we are talking about cats and various other bits of these classic stuff.
The light blondes.
Yes, exactly. It's way forward. Hence Sam. Sam, any questions you want to put to Alan about life, the universe, various other things before we head off to Sci-Fi London's very own Louis Savvy?
No.
Do you like the cover? Do you like the cover of the magazine?
I do, actually. Yes, I was just admiring the magazine, talking of the magazine, and I had a quick look at the article back as well. Yeah, yeah, it's really good. Well done, Anne Worrell. Saying it like it is.
The cover was done by an artist called Andy Lambert and also a chap called Phil Stevens, who we actually bought some of these Paradigm Daleks off YouTube, whatever. Not YouTube, where is it? Where did he buy it from? eBay, sorry.
Yes.
And he then smashed them up and repainted them and reconstructed sort of bits inside to make it look like from bits of old Airfix kits. And then, you know, then it was sort of all put together, and I think he did a tremendous job on it.
Terrific.
When I first approached him to ask, he said, oh, we can only do a black and white cover. And so I sent it to him, and he came back and said, no, all right, we'll do a colour one then, because it was so dramatic colour, but without the colour, it was, you know, it didn't quite work.
I was going to say that is unusual, because they are using black and white with the dwarfs, aren't they? That's why I didn't make the connection that it was.
Tell again?
Until Alex said that it was to do with the dwarfs. Mm. Yeah.
The longest running magazine ever for Appreciation Society is Club Magazine.
Yes, the Paradigm Daleks were brought in 2010, and they were not a hit with the...
They were. You hated them, Alan, as I recall. You
Everyone
actually
hated them.
It was like incandescent with rage.
So you were happy to blow them up and set them on fire?
Well, I think they look good that way. I think On Fire. Hmm. They look great.
But as attempts to sort of echo the original Raymond Cusick design, it's not there. Alan...
No, it's not there, you're right. No,
exactly.
In fact, the article in there, which goes fairly through what went wrong, and apparently what happened was the top section was built by a different group of people who got the measurements wrong. So one lot were working in inches and the other lot were working in metric. So that's why it looked ridiculous.
And that's just part of the challenges that we're faced with in the decimalisation system. But don't let me get started on that particular thing. It's a whole different era. Eva, would you like to put those last two questions to Alan Stevens, who already has managed to identify that, yes, it is the Aisha Brough we have in the studio, not some random
Aisha.
Soul called Aisha, who's what actually sort of involved with
this. Just somebody I brought in off the street, really.
Exactly. You said, just say your name's Aisha, it'd be fine. You know, OK.
So,
yeah. Eva, off you go, please.
Hello, Alan.
Hello, Eva.
Hello. Have you enjoyed your link with us today on the radio?
Yes, it was very adventurous.
I know. and hopefully, will we be hearing again from you soon?
When I get another CT out, I'm sure Alex will be back.
Oh, I'm sure we'll have you back before then, Alan. You know, it'll happen. Don't worry. Sci-Fi London 19. 19! 18. Louis Savvy, where did the last 18 years go? 19 years of Sci-Fi London? Outrageous. Are we in a time machine? I know.
Good evening, sir. Good evening, everybody.
Well, indeed. And Sci-Fi London approaches on a day-by-day basis with a lovely smiley-faced balloon, which obviously suggests that everything is happy as we head to the 15th, 22nd of May, 2019, at Prince Charles Cinema and Stratford Picture House. It is awesome, but let me introduce you to an equally awesome soul in the studio. That's Aisha Brough.
Hi.
Hello.
Hey. Sam Stone.
Hi, Louis.
Who indeed preps us with Sci-Fi Weekender. There's only one, Sam Stone.
I know. Good evening, Sam.
Exactly.
Hi. Nice to speak to you.
Eloise Sheehan, who may be persuaded to take part in the 48-hour film challenge, something our midweek drive-outs have done in the past.
I'm totally up for that.
Fantastic.
Yay. That's what I'd like
to
hear.
Good.
And Eva MacDonald.
Hello.
And Bethany Gulliver.
Hello.
Hey. So, Louis, the floor is yours. Would you like to share with us about the 19th annual Sci-Fi London Film Festival, which, as I say, between the 15th and the 22nd of May. I mean, I recall when we were actually having zombie parades, you know, in London and down the South Bank, etc. And now you'd say, well, who can tell the difference when you're in Westminster? But that's
exactly.
Yeah,
I was just going to say, wasn't that
last week?
Exactly. Political meeting.
Yeah, it's very true. What can we look forward to this year? Because the films have been selected.
They have the 17. We're only showing 17. We're a little bit weaker this year. We've got some fantastic films. I think there's 5 or 6 world premieres in, and we've got the usual mix of eclectic stuff. You know, we as you know, always look for incredible international independent film. We always find down the cracks and the edges and in between everything. So you know, it's a really good lineup. The other thing I just wanted to let you know as well. Alex and everybody, we've just added another screening, actually, on April the 11th at the Prince Charles, which is like a warm-up for the festival. So we'll be showing a lot of the trailers and talking about what's coming up. And then we're screening a fantastic new American film with Pedro Pascal, who you may or may not know has just been cast in the new Star Wars TV show. As the lead, and it's got rave reviews. It's been said it's the best indie since Moon, and it's what every Star Wars spin-off film should have been. It's a fantastic, it's a western basically set on another planet. It's a really good film called Prospect, and we're showing that on the 11th, and details are on our website now,
which, of course, is scifilondon.com. Quite simple.
It certainly is. Thank you.
Bethany, obviously being a lass from Solihull, we're never quite sure whether sort of the adventures of going to London. I know you've been to Cardiff, but you haven't been to Edinburgh. But you got very excited when we were talking about going to London last week.
I
so that's yeah, yeah, so
love.
So Sci-Fi London, does that appeal to you as a sci-fi soul?
Yeah, definitely. I'm always open to watching new sci-fi films, particularly because I love it, but I haven't actually seen that many. So it sounds brilliant.
Well, that's why we started the festival, because there are some fantastic films that get made, big Hollywood productions and so on, but you can see those everywhere, and very quickly you can see them on all the VOD and all the other platforms and everything. But a lot of the films that we look for are still as good, whether that's technically or from performance or whatever else. It's just there just isn't enough capacity. We're fighting Disney, for screen space all the time, so that's why the festival's there, because we bring you, hopefully, films that you'll love from all over the place.
Like Annihilation. There we are. That AI film explained, a wonderful blog entry a few years ago, the first film written by an artificial intelligence was made for the 48-hour film challenge. I know, I couldn't believe it. Louis revealed this to me actually outside the Odeon Cinema in Stratford. I nearly dropped my recorder. It was that staggering, Talk to us about this screenplay, because I know at the time you were worried, does this mean it's the end for human beings? Have artificial intelligence has taken over the whole running of the whole industry?
Yeah, I mean, I found it fascinating. The 48-hour film challenge, for those who don't know, we challenge filmmakers to make a 5-minute sci-fi short in a weekend. So Saturday morning, we give them some elements they have to use, like the title of the film and a line of dialogue. And on Monday, they have to give us back a film they've written, shot, edited and created in the 48 hours time. So that particular year, it was 3 years ago now, we got a phone call from some guys in the States who'd taken part, a director called Oscar Sharp. And he said, have you watched our film yet? And I said, no. He said, well, watch it. You need to watch it really quickly. Because we're not sure whether we qualify still. And we looked at it, and the first minute of the film explains that, you know, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, a computer, an AI, beat the world's best chess player. And 2 weeks before our challenge, an AI had beaten the world's best Go player. So they would see if whether or not an AI could beat the world's best filmmakers. And they got their AI to write a 5-minute screenplay, and then they just did as they were told. They shot what was written on the page. And it doesn't make any sense, but it's quite poetic.
Yeah. But then sense can be nonsense in all sorts of ways. Yeah. And let's face it. Louis, if we dial it back to the days of Gerry Anderson, UFO, SID, Space Intruder Detector, you know, I mean, the dulcet tones of SID, you know, saying two parsecs away. Fantastic. I mean, clipped pronunciation.
Yeah, luckily, SID wasn't into screenwriting, so we were safe from him and Hal and everyone else. But
speechwriting, of course.
What, just to let you know, what happened for everyone as well is that the following year, they got the AI to co-write their entry with them, and it's got David Hasselhoff in it. It's got Tom Payne from The Walking Dead in it, Sarah Hay from The Black Swan. It's an incredible film and really, really makes sense. And also, it's a sequel, a direct sequel to the one that the AI wrote the year before. And then last year, the AI, they allowed it to direct the film.
Yeah.
So they shot some stuff, gave it. It wrote a script. It commissioned another AI to write the soundtrack, and then it edited the whole thing together. It's amazing.
This is one of the reasons why Bethany will probably attest to the fact that Rossum's Universal Robots with Carol Chapek. I mean, predictive or what?
Absolutely.
Bethany's gone silent. Eloise, any thoughts? You know, your screenwriting thing could be... Sam, what about the whole notion of AI taking over every little Cat Lightfoot novel that you've produced?
Where do I have to go to nobble the thing?
Whoa.
Writers are up against it as it is. So.
Skynet.
Fascinating, actually, to be honest.
Sam,
I think it's fascinating.
I think they should keep AI out of the arts and just go into medicine. And think, leave us alone.
Okay.
Go away.
Louis, you were going to put a challenge there, I think, to Sam.
We're still going through our short film selection. I've probably got about 80 films left to watch, and then we'll announce everything. But I've just watched a lovely little film called Athena, which is a play on Alexa, and it's about a failed screenwriter who just couldn't find... He had real creative block, and he couldn't find any decent script. But he got into computer programming, and he programmed an AI to be able to write scripts for him.
Oh, yeah.
And he had a string of absolutely massive blockbuster Hollywood hits. But Hollywood's taste was starting to change. They were saying the audience want more and fresher and more personal. So he challenged his AI to write something much more personal, which the AI duly did. Delivered half the script and said, what do you think of this? And, you know, printed it, wrote it in 57 seconds, and then printed it out. And the guy said, this is great. He said, fine, okay, if you want it, I want my name on this one.
Oh, I was just about to say, billing is going to become a problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the way forward, possibly. Yeah. Eloise.
Well, you never know. You never know.
Has the 48-hour film challenge whetted your appetite? Will you be gathering a team together, possibly yourself, Lawrence, etc., and actually getting another team together for this?
Lincoln do something similar, don't they, for when you start media?
But exactly.
So we're prepared.
You should really
be
ahead of the game here. Yeah. Although we didn't win last year, which was a tragedy. Eva almost took part last year, did you not?
There was one. Look, we did blue one once. I remember
shot on
one.
Mobile phones.
Yeah,
literally four parts of British Isles.
I can't remember what year it was though. But
years ago, Eva.
Was it 2 years ago? Yeah. No, we were at the Arboretum.
Two years ago, you did it. And it was quite a nice. It was quite a nice story. Just your production values let you down. That's all.
Exactly. Oh, thanks. We try.
But with Eloise on the case...
That's constructive criticism.
It is, exactly. You don't want to be too harsh. No. Otherwise, you think you're artificial intelligence. Very critical.
And actually, it's just simple things like, you know, making sure your sound is stronger and a grade. You know, a grade can make such a difference. Just treating the film afterwards properly and making sure that everyone can hear everything properly. It's always that. I find sound is much more important than the picture sometimes, because I don't know whether or not your image was supposed to be blurry or whether the actor was supposed to be really in the distance. Mm. But if the sound doesn't work, then I'm back
hopeless.
In my chair.
It's lost. No subtitles. It's like a radio show with bad noise. You know, it's just not going to work.
Exactly. Exactly.
Anyway,
exactly.
So those are the things we need to look at this year, Eloise, clearly. So get the sound right.
I can do lighting.
And registrations are open now. So wow. You can go to the 48-hour website. If you just go to Sci-Fi London, you'll find a link there, which will take you through to the registration form. It's free to take part, and there's no age limit, and you can do it from anywhere in the world.
It's all there. In a few moments, we're going to be finding out about Sci-Fi Weekender. Oh, before Sci-Fi London,
fabulous.
There's Sci-Fi Weekender. It just gets better and better. Eloise, last two questions for Louis, please.
Hi, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
Always.
And will you be joining us again sometime?
As soon as Alex invites me on.
Always.
Of course I will.
I mean, needless to say, Eloise to Louis. There's a Louis connection there somewhere. Which, of course, it's Mickey DeLenz who takes the lead vocals with, of course, Mike Nesmith, Peter Tork and Davy Jones, two of whom are no longer with us. They're in Heaven FM, as we like to say. Welcome to the programme, Graham Harper, BAFTA award-winning director, general all-round wonderful person. How are you, sir?
Oh, thank you very much for that. I'm fine.
Excellent. You know, I can't believe, Graham, that Sam Stone actually turned down the chance to actually feature Zilch on an upcoming version of The Stumptotes, specifically episode 45. I really was shocked at that, Sam. I think,
didn't like it.
Didn't like it.
I listened to it and thought, don't get it.
Mr. Bobolina, Mr. Bob Dobolina, Mr. China Clipper calling Alameda, China Clipper calling Alameda.
No,
so many things.
Definitely not.
If I said, surely, if I'd given you the opportunity of Peter Percival Patterson's pet pig, Porky, you would have said yes, wouldn't you?
No, probably not.
even though Peter Tork, the late, great Peter Tork, would say...
Peter Percival Patterson had a pig named Porky. This pig named Porky loved pie. He loved pizza pie, pumpkin pie, pineapple pie, pizza pie, mince tarts. And Peter Percival Patterson's big Porky loved pie for breakfast, pie for lunch, pie in the afternoon, and pie before he went to bed. Peter Percival Patterson's big Porky ate so much pie that, do you know what he did? He popped.
Quite right, too. Tragic ending, obviously. But that's what happens if you eat too much pie. You pop. It It's our fitness routine that we're putting together. In the studio, Aisha Brough is with us. Graham, I don't know if you... Because you were more BBC, really, back in the day. Aisha, were you BBC or were you mostly ITV?
I was mainly ITV. I did some BBC stuff.
Mm. Of course, Liftoff was very much the sort of ITV answer, I think, to Top of the Pops, really.
Yeah.
Slightly earlier time slot, I believe.
Yeah, we finished by 6.
Am I hallucinating? It could happen. Did you have a little pet owl there as well?
I did not have a pet owl.
That's all right.
No, when I first started the show,
yes,
many, many years ago, mm, when Muriel Young,
yes,
was doing 5 o'clock Club,
mm-hmm,
Wally Whiten, right, was Ollie Beak, and Ivan Owen, who was Basil Brush,
of course,
did Fred Barker. So when Muriel became head of entertainment, mm-hmm, for that time slot,
yes, yep,
and we were doing a pop show, I was very happy to do it, and mm, then she said, I'd like to bring Ollie and Fred in.
Of course.
And I said, who are Ollie and Fred?
As producers I want to do.
Now, I wanted to be quite cool. It was a pop program.
Exactly.
And she presented me, yeah, with a stuffed owl, mm, bits falling off it.
That's why I was delicate in the approach to the question, you see. I didn't want to bring up too many painful memories. But, you know.
I got used to doing it, but the two of them, of course, were under the desk when we did these sketches. Yeah. They tortured the life out of me. Yeah. They would unzip my dress. They would tie my shoes
hashtag
together.
Aisha too. Oh, Lord.
And I knew I had to go and leave after the sketch and go and sing live.
Yeah.
And I was in disarray. They would say things, double innuendos, that would really be very embarrassing on an early programme. I was walking through King's Cross Station, and this was the end. I
followed
thought,
they've
got to go. No, this guy yelled out, oh, it's the girl who does it with the monkey.
Oh, wow.
I said, that's the end. I said, that's it, I'm finished. Take the animals out of the show. That was the end of them.
Yeah, I thought I'd got it. It was some sort of emergent there. You know, clearly, I would have had words with Muriel back in the day. She had a house in Portugal, I seem to recall. But
yeah,
still,
I used to go out there on holiday in Albufeira. There was Cliff Richard, Frank Highfield, Cilla Black,
Olivia Newton-John, Liz Brewer.
Wise. It was lovely.
There we are. Life continues. Anyway, Graham, what have you been getting up to recently, and would you like to share with us? Or do you want to just chat to a team of fantastic, I mean, proving that actually sisters are doing it for themselves. Also, we've got Eloise, we've got Bethany, we've got Eva, we've got Sam, and we've got Aisha. You have the role of formerly Phil Leonis of kind of wrapping up the whole programme. Who do you wish to speak to?
Well, the programme you talk about, was that live?
We shot it live, but it was videoed. We used to go up and rehearse it on a Wednesday morning, and then we would shoot it live. It would have to be something absolutely disastrous for them to stop rolling tape.
Yeah, so, I know that period very well.
You'd remember? Because
yeah.
The expense was just massive if you stopped and restarted. So yeah. I think I did it for 10 years, I would think that we probably only ever stopped tape or had to do something else twice in the whole time. It was just not something you did.
It's professionalism, Aisha. Professionalism.
Fear.
One take.
Fear,
one
I
take,
think.
Bruff. That's the key thing.
Oh, don't. You made me think about the owl now. Dog. I'm trying to be a rock chick. Look what I had. Two stuffed animals, and they'd go, go, girl.
Exactly. That's the kind of passage of life. Surely that has to be the title of your autobiography, My Life with an Owl.
Oh,
stuffed
don't,
brackets.
Don't do it to me. Don't.
Moving on. Eloise, any thoughts for Graham?
No, I actually don't.
No, she's had a title.
Yeah.
Okay, Eva.
Hello, Graham.
Hello, Eva.
Hiya. I want to ask you, what did you make of the recent Oscars?
Well, I didn't. I have to tell you, I didn't watch them. However, I did watch Coleman getting hers.
Did you find it hilarious?
I did not. I found it really gushing and awful.
I didn't think it was funny.
Not hilarious at all, really. I'm sorry, Olivia. You might have been in Peep Show, but that's not funny. You know, it's just
I didn't think blowing the raspberry was funny. I mean, I can't...
If Ricky Gervais had done it, he would have been hand-drawn and quartered. Glenn Close wasn't very amused.
I just found it all a bit... what I saw, I didn't... I just get on with it, accept it and go, thank you very much. Oh. I think she's brilliant, though. I think she's a fabulous actress. I didn't end up liking The Favourite. It wasn't my favourite film of this year at all.
What did you like?
saw two films just before it, which was unfortunate. Stan and Ollie, which is a masterpiece. And, I've forgotten the title of it. The story of the woman who did all the forgeries of the famous letters of Parker and whatever.
Yeah, Eloise?
Can you ever forgive me?
Yes. Which, again, I thought was a masterpiece. It's absolutely brilliant. I thought The Favourite was fabulous to kind of look at, but I don't know, it just didn't do it for me. Maybe it was overhyped.
What was The Favourite? I must have missed that.
The Favourite. It's called The Favourite.
Oh, is that...
Obviously, if people expect you to win, it's called The Favourite. Exactly.
Oh, good grief.
That's why you're not... I mean, the bookies around the globe have obviously had nightmares with that. You know, I'd like to put, you know, a wager on The Favourite. Yeah, and? It's The Favourite.
Graham, did you like Green Book?
No, I went to see it yesterday, and it was at the wrong time, so I didn't have a chance. That's my next film. It looks terrific. Have you seen it?
No, my brother went, though, and we like similar things, and he said to me that it was absolutely... He thought it was great.
I would
give it a 7.5 out of 10. I saw it as a sort of precursor of the weekend. I saw Green Book and I saw Bohemian Rhapsody. It's okay, but I can understand concerns that people said it kind of is a bit too twee in the ending, that suddenly any racial problems are all sorted out when you invite people for Christmas.
Oh, you know?
That's
kind of
yeah,
I get
you.
I know. But Rami Malek's performance was amazing.
In Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, absolutely amazing.
Again, what a masterpiece that was.
That is an Oscar-winning performance.
It was.
Absolutely.
And that's why he's won one.
Yeah.
And do you know the other thing was, I don't know the name of the sound editor, but there was a sound editor who I suspect won an Oscar. She was up for an Oscar for the music soundtrack of Bohemian Rhapsody. I mean, what she had to add to the music and all to the crowd scenes or whatever.
Yeah, do you think she won?
Stunning.
I don't know.
No, she didn't.
She didn't?
I think.
Who got the soundtrack? Probably Star is Born.
It was the Star is Born, The Shallows, isn't it, that won? Yeah. Best song.
Who got the soundtrack?
I believe, might have been Black Panther. I'll double check on that one.
Okay.
Which is quite extraordinary. Of course, Graham, I've just recalled that when Live Aid was actually happening, we were already 2 years into doing these radio shows. It's strange how time just passes by, isn't it, really?
Yeah, it does, I'm afraid. Here we are.
Yeah, here we are.
Can
you're
I
in
ask
London.
Graham something? Graham, what is it like to have a BAFTA?
It was a huge, real surprise. It was a Welsh BAFTA. It wasn't one from.
I wouldn't care.
Wales.
But it's a BAFTA.
The problem for me was that there were four nominations. I was one of them, and the other three were Welsh.
Oh my God.
It was in Wales, and it was Cardiff, and I won. And that. I shouldn't think many of the Welsh people were very happy about it, but I was really, really surprised and pleased.
I think it's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you very
much.
Best original score was Black Panther. Best original song was Shallow from Star is Born. And best sound editing and best sound mixing, both to Bohemian Rhapsody.
She did win it.
You were right, yeah.
Yeah,
it was remarkable.
Glad we managed to actually dot that T and cross that I, or something
like
that.
Thank you very much. No, that's brilliant.
Very good. Graham, would you like to ask Aisha and Sam and the team, have they enjoyed the show? You know the questions.
I do.
Reverse it.
All right, you lot. Have you enjoyed yourselves being
very
on the programme?
Very much.
Very much.
Yeah, I really have.
Well,
and are you going to come back if asked?
Yeah. Oh, Sam said no. I would.
Thank you, Aisha.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
I haven't forgotten a certain sort of individual who said, Aisha's thinking about possibly doing an agony answers system on radio. Let's talk about that.
I thought, where we go from that sort of basis.
Yeah. Different line.
I'd love to do that.
You could talk about having the stress of working with Bing Crosby and Bob Hope. And an owl. Exactly. Yeah.
I've had all the best, honey.
Eva, I trust you appreciate this in terms of your next career move, basically.
Oh, yes,
we've had Salt Fleet, which was amazing.
Was it really?
Thanks to William Coles and Abigail LeMay from the streets of Edinburgh, Steve Dickinson, of course, from Scarborough, Annette Andre from San Diego, Alan Stevens from the Forest of Dean. Yes, he finally recognised Aisha Bruff. I don't know. Louise Savvy, of course, from London, and Graham Harper, also from London. And in the studio, thanks to Eloise Sheehan, Bethany Gulliver, Eva McDonald, Sam Stone, and Aisha Brough. That's it. We're out of here. Graham, what should our sort of final sort of closing thing be at this stage? You know, write something quickly for us.
Just enjoy the weather while it's good, because I think it's going to get bad soon.
Oh, yeah. No.
Happy good evening.
I like the sentiment, but it's too long, okay? But I think, you know, happy good evening probably is a catchphrase. We'll probably sort of see us out from that point of view. So, a 1, 2, 3.
Happy good evening.
I'm tired of feeling so broken. I'm tired of falling in love.